Thanks for joining us on WPR News. Larry Mueller here, and we're turning our attention to mosquitoes a bit. This summer, two Wisconsin residents died, and another was hospitalized with West Nile virus. And this summer, a person was hospitalized in Wisconsin with Eastern equine encephalitis, also spread by infected mosquitoes. That disease has killed people throughout New England. There are ways to protect yourself against these viruses and Lyme disease, which is also carried by deer ticks. Larry Mueller here. My guest now, Rebecca Osborne, epidemiologist specializing in vector-borne diseases for the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. And as we talk with Rebecca Osborne, I hope you'll join in. How can you protect yourself from these diseases? You have symptoms or questions about treatment? Give a call. The number is 800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@WPR.org. Rebecca Osborne, thank you so much for joining us today.
Of course. Thank you for the invitation.
Well, let's take EEE. This summer, a rare mosquito-borne virus, it's called Eastern Equine Encephalitis, killed a New Hampshire resident, the first reported fatal case in that state since, I think, 2014. What do we know about Eastern Equine Encephalitis?
Yeah, it is unfortunately a very serious disease. It is thankfully quite rare in the United States and in Wisconsin, but there are certainly some cases that can be reported in the country every year. And unfortunately, the people who do get sick from this disease, sometimes you might hear it called triple E because it does have such a long name. Are often hospitalized, and unfortunately there's about a 30% fatality rate. So of the people that get really sick, about 30% of them do die from triple E. So while being very rare, it is very serious. So we try and keep very close tabs on this disease, and the activity that we detect, we try and report promptly to the public.
And there's no treatment for it, is there, or am I wrong?
No, you're right. There is no specific antiviral treatment. You know, antibiotics don't work because this is a virus. Unfortunately, when a patient is really sick with triple E virus, the only thing a doctor can do is sort of treat the symptoms themselves. So they're trying to control inflammation of the brain, trying to make sure this person has, you know, enough antibodies that are fighting off the virus and so on. But there is no specific medication to cure triple E virus. So it's unfortunate that we don't have those tools, but it is the situation that we're currently in.
Yeah. And in July, we had one person hospitalized in Wisconsin with triple E. Are mosquitoes in this state carrying the virus?
Yes. Yeah, so that is a really good question. And this is one of those quirks about public health surveillance. We do have a case of triple E in a Wisconsin resident, and upon investigating the case, which is what public health authorities do for these types of diseases, it was determined that this person most likely acquired the infection outside of Wisconsin in a New England state. So we don't have any evidence currently that mosquitoes in Wisconsin are carrying and transmitting this triple E virus. Now, that being said, that doesn't mean that there is no risk. Sometimes, you know, mosquitoes can carry this virus without us detecting it until, unfortunately, somebody gets sick. But all the evidence that we have right now suggests that there is likely very low levels, if not no levels, of triple E virus currently circulating. But the risk of triple E and other mosquito-borne viruses will continue until you know, through the rest of the summer and into the fall, typically until the temperatures really drop.
Yeah. Well, one virus we do have in Wisconsin, if I'm not mistaken, is West Nile. And this summer, two Wisconsin residents did die of West Nile virus. I think a third person in the state was hospitalized. How does the West Nile virus compare to the triple E in the way it sickens people?
Yeah, so West Nile is more common than Triple E virus. These are, again, both viruses that are spread by mosquitoes. Very similar in that they can sometimes cause, a flu-like illness. So this is something that would cause a fever and body aches and muscle pains and fatigue, and you're just going to feel really crummy. It's not going to typically involve respiratory symptoms. So unlike, some other viruses that can circulate, you're not going to have a congestion or a cough typically, but these other symptoms are very common. That's what we call sort of West Nile fever or Eastern equine encephalitis fever. Those are the more mild cases, but both of these viruses can, in some individuals, go on to become very serious. And this is, again, commonly showing signs of inflammation of the brain, seizures, confusion, sort of mental changes, and unfortunately can sometimes lead to death. West Nile is typically not as serious, so it causes fewer deaths, about a 10% fatality rate compared to Triple E, which is about a 30% fatality rate. But as we've seen, unfortunately, already in our state, we've already had two Wisconsin residents who have died with West Nile virus. And we hope that there are no more, but there might be more people who get severely ill and may die from this disease.
I'm wondering, how does the Wisconsin Department of Health Services keep track of cases, and what's your role as an epidemiologist?
So we here at the State Health Department, our part of responsibilities are to try and track these reportable diseases. So West Nile virus and Triple E virus and several other diseases spread by mosquitoes and ticks are what we call reportable or notifiable to the state. So this means that a laboratory or a hospital or a clinic that might either diagnose somebody with one of these diseases or test them for one of these diseases, and the test is positive, that information gets reported into our surveillance system for the state. And so what we then do is do a little bit of follow-up or investigation with our local and tribal health department partners and try and get some additional information about, where did this person get exposed? What were their symptoms? Were they treated or hospitalized? And so on. And then we use that information to not only, learn more about that disease, sort of what symptoms it might cause in people, who is affected, right? What age groups, what location, other factors that might be important for people who are at risk. We use that to learn more about the disease. And then we also share that information as needed with the public as sort of an alert, right? Hey, we found that people are getting sick from this disease. So it can help inform the public that these diseases are here. The risk is current, right now, and mosquitoes are active. And so it's time to think about that when you go outside and try and take precautions. So we're just trying to track these diseases, their movements, who's affected, and hopefully in the end, prevent them is the goal.
And I'm thinking about West Nile. It's my understanding that the majority of people who contract West Nile virus don't have symptoms. Is there any way to know how then do we know they were infected? Let's put it that way.
Yeah, right. So maybe this is good news, right? That a lot of people who get infected with West Nile virus will never develop symptoms, never know they're infected, and thankfully will develop immunity to the infection and likely not get the disease at all going forward. So that's the good news. But it can be tricky to know, am I protected? And have I had this infection or not? And there really isn't a great way to tell. You could certainly talk to your doctor if you have questions about this, but there's not really a test they can run to say, yes, you're immune. They could potentially run an antibody test for a type of antibody that can develop during infection, but then remains elevated for years afterward. It's called an IgG antibody. This test can sometimes indicate past infection with a disease like West Nile virus and may be informative if you're somebody who's in that high-risk group. And what I mean by that is really we see the people who have severe disease are typically of an older age, so people over 65. and people who have immunocompromising conditions, so might be undergoing chemotherapy for cancer, might have just had an organ transplant, people who might be taking medications to weaken their immune system. If you're in one or both of those groups, you might be at a higher risk for developing severe illness, and it might be something you want to talk to your doctor about, whether or not it's worth running a test to see if you have antibodies.
And on the West Nile, I think that virus has been found in donated blood. Is that correct?
Yes. So this is a universal screening system done by blood collection agencies, and this is to protect the blood supply. The reasoning behind this, right, is that you could have gotten West Nile virus and not develop symptoms, so you feel perfectly healthy, and you go to donate blood, which is a wonderful thing. You know, we need a lot of blood donors, and maybe your blood is infected with West Nile and you don't realize it. So all blood collection agencies in the United States will screen blood donors for West Nile virus, and this test is typically run, and then if it's positive, that result will get reported to public health for the reasons we all talked about before, you know, so that we can track the infections and we can kind of investigate what's going on with this particular individual. So we have detected some of those individuals in Wisconsin as well, and again, it helps us know where the virus is circulating in the state, so we can help warn the public. It's, you know, it appears to be here and circulating in mosquitoes in this area, so take precautions against mosquito bites.
And so precautions, I guess, insect repellent would be one. What else could we think about?
Yeah, so insect repellent is a great option. I know there's a lot of products out there. So we typically recommend an EPA or Environmental Protection Agency registered product. That would include DEET and others like picaridin, or there's oil of lemon eucalyptus and a few others that you can look up. If you go to the EPA website, they have a great page that talks about all the different repellents and kind of their intended use and efficacy. So what are they effective at preventing? So those are great options. The other thing that I like to do and recommend to other people that has great evidence in supporting its use is using permethrin. This is a chemical that doesn't go on your skin, but it goes in on your clothing. It does take a little bit of planning because you want to do it in advance of going outside where you might be exposed to mosquitoes. This also works for ticks as well. You spray your clothing with this permethrin spray, and it embeds into the material, and it both repels and upon contact can kill a lot of ticks and mosquitoes if they do come into contact with you. So this will last several washings on your clothing, and it's great. I do this for myself, and I'll throw on my long sleeve shirt and long sleeve pants that are embedded with permethrin when I know I'm going to be outside where ticks are active or when mosquitoes are active, and that helps me feel protected. There's a few other things that we recommend too that are pretty easy. Like if you're sitting outside in your yard having a nice gathering, maybe you're sitting around a barbecue or a fire, you can set up some fans. Mosquitoes in particular are really poor flyers. They can't fly very well through even just a slight wind. So if you have some fans going, that can really keep the mosquitoes away from you because they just can't make it through that little breeze that the fan is creating. So there's several options for thinking about prevention, but we certainly recommend insect repellents and permethrin if you can do it, and then just avoiding those times and places where mosquitoes might be active.
And I also make sure that the water is changed in my bird bath. If it hangs around for a long time, I think mosquitoes can breed in how many days? You want to get rid of standing water, I think.
Yes, that's a great one too. So if you have a home where you might have standing water around it, whether that's a bird bath or pet bowls or flower pots, rain gutters, or any other sort of animal water tanks or anything like that, if you can, drain that water, replace it, dump it out every few days. So yeah, mosquitoes will often lay their eggs right in the water. All of the baby mosquitoes, or we call them larval mosquitoes, do require water to survive. So they're fully aquatic. And so they'll they'll need to develop in that water before they hatch into adult mosquitoes who can fly around and then bite you. So if you try and remove a lot of that standing water from your property, we recommend every 3 to 5 days if you can dump and clean out that water and replace it. That'll certainly keep the mosquitoes from developing in those small little containers. And it can be as little as a few inches of water in a very small container can still be perfect breeding habitat for mosquitoes.
Rebecca Osborne, our guest today, epidemiologist specializing in vector-borne diseases for the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. I want to ask her about Lyme disease, too. You may have a question, and I hope you join in. Number to call is 800-642-1234 or email to talk@WPR.org. I'm Larry Mueller for WPR News. Taking a look at mosquito-borne illnesses today with our guest, Rebecca Osborne, epidemiologist with the Wisconsin Department of Health Services. Great to have Rebecca with us today. Questions for her? Join in. The number is 800-642-1234, or you could email address talk@WPR.org. That's talk@WPR.org. Love to hear from you. We're talking about triple E, equine encephalitis, eastern equine encephalitis. We've talked about West Nile virus, and I also want to get into Lyme disease with Rebecca as well. So look forward to hearing from you. Lyme disease, Wisconsin reports a huge, well, the highest annual cases of Lyme disease, which of course is spread by deer ticks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so Wisconsin is unfortunately one of the high incidence states for Lyme. This means we have lots of cases every year, and we expect to have lots of cases every year. This is a disease that is spread by a really tiny tick called the deer tick. And it's one of those small ticks that can bite you and go undetected. So it's a pretty tricky one to find. So we also recommend a lot of the same things that would prevent mosquito bites. We recommend to do those same things to prevent tick bites. So a lot of the same insect repellents that are effective against mosquito bites will work for ticks as well. The permethrin embedded in your clothing is another great one for ticks and mosquitoes. Fans won't help with ticks, but things like staying away from tall vegetation can help. Trying to do your tick checks when you're done from coming outside. Showering within 2 hours after coming indoors, things like that can help keep yourself from getting tick bites. But it is a tricky one to find, so we encourage multiple prevention strategies if you can.
Permethrin embedded in your clothing. It's, well, I've never had a tick bite since I've been using it, so I'm happy for that. Paul in Western Wisconsin has something, I think maybe back to Triple E. Let's go there. Hi, Paul.
Hey, how you doing, Larry? Just wanted to share that I think it was about 15 years ago, my father-in-law in about the middle of fall overcame with a headache over the weekend, a few days later became unresponsive, and unfortunately it took quite a while for the diagnosis, but he was one of the people that had eastern equine encephalitis. I think that year, again, I think it was 15 years ago, as I recall, I think there were 6 cases in the country. He became unresponsive. It took quite a while for the diagnosis to come back, but it did come back from the CDC, and it seemed just strange just because it was fall, and it was, I think there had already been a frost, may not have been a real hard frost, but it was kind of unexpected seasonally.
And he was in Wisconsin, Paul?
Correct, in northern Wisconsin, yeah, above Highway 8.
Hmm. Comment? Wow. Yeah, comment, Rebecca?
Yeah, I'm so sorry. It can be a very, very devastating illness. And that's a great point that you bring up about the seasonality. You know, people often think of mosquitoes being active in the summer, which is of course true, But we have seen mosquito activity, including mosquito-borne disease cases reported well into the fall. We've had cases reported in October and even November. And as we start to see shifts towards more mild winters, this could be extended even further. So mosquitoes are more cold hardy than you might imagine. Certainly we'll start to see their activity go down as the temperatures start to decline, but it doesn't mean that they're gonna completely stop being active until we get really, really cold temperatures. Usually at least a hard frost will knock down quite a few of them. Maybe some took refuge in, you know, these really small microclimates where they can survive those. So it's still important to sort of keep that in mind. I'm so sorry to hear about your family member. And you know, I don't know how this person's doing, but often people who do survive Tripoli still have ongoing, you know, problems, residual problems from the illness. So it can be really, really devastating.
Yeah. Actually, unfortunately, Paul's grandfather died from it. So it's too bad. But Paul, sorry for your loss, but thank you for sharing the information with us. Appreciate it very much. Sandy and Rhinelander, it's your turn. Hi, Sandy.
Hi. So I know I'm not saying this right, that Permethrin?
Permethrin, yeah.
Yeah, thank you. So I have cats, and I'm always concerned about using that because, you know, even when I'm outside, my cats like me to hold them, and I've heard that that's not good for cats neurologically.
Yeah, that's a great point to bring up, and we always want to think about not only human health, but animal health, and I know a lot of people have their beloved pets, including myself. So if possible, you know, you can certainly look at other alternatives. If you are concerned about your animal, especially cats, coming into contact with permethrin, you can use the topical insect repellents that would go on your skin. If you do really want to try permethrin, one thing you could consider, I don't know if this is an option, but you could try and find a location, ideally outdoors, where you can spray the permethrin where it's very well, aerated and there's a lot of good circulation, and where you can keep your cats away. I don't know if you can exclude them from that area for at least a certain amount of time, keep them indoors or put them in an area where they can stay away from this location. Once the permethrin has dried on your clothing, which might take anywhere from 20 minutes to an hour, depending on the temperature outside and kind of where the clothes are, once the permethrin has dried, it should not be a danger at all to your cats. So it's really just keeping them away from the area where you're spraying it and when the clothing is wet. And after that, once it's dried, there should be no concern with coming into contact with your animals.
Would that hold true with the clothing that has been already permeated with permethrin?
Yeah. Right. So there are clothes that are already embedded with permethrin that you can purchase directly from a store. So you don't have to do the application yourself. Again, since those have already been embedded and the chemical has dried, it's attached to the fibers. It's not going to come off onto your animal or yourself as you touch it. It's really only going to repel or kill those insects if they come into contact with it.
Someone else wonders which counties report the highest number of Lyme disease cases.
Yeah, so we do see the most number of cases in the northern part of the state, typically the northwestern part of the state. But this has really changed over the last few years in that we used to only see Lyme disease cases in the northern part of the state. And those of us that lived in the southern part of Wisconsin or the southeastern part of the state, really didn't have to worry unless we traveled to that, the northern parts of the state. So over the last few decades, the deer tick has expanded into other parts of the state, including southern Wisconsin. So now we see deer ticks in every single county in Wisconsin, unfortunately. There's still a gradient. We still see the most number of ticks and the most number of Lyme disease cases in the northern regions of Wisconsin. There's just great tick habitat up there. These deer ticks love lots of wooded areas, lots of leaf litter. It's perfect habitat for them. So this is still highest risk in Wisconsin, but unfortunately there is a risk essentially in all counties in the state Of course, if you're in a very urban location, you're likely a little bit safer, but there can still be ticks that people pick up in urban parks and even urban yards where there's wooded areas. So keep that in mind as you're moving around outdoors.
Yeah, I think there were in 2022, there were 264 cases in Dane County and quite a large number in Waukesha as well. So you got to be vigilant. And Rebecca, it's been a pleasure talking with you. Thank you so much for taking time. Boy, it flew by. I hope we can have you back. Thank you.
Of course. Thank you.
Rebecca Osborne, epidemiologist specializing in vector-borne diseases with our Wisconsin Department of Health Services. Big thanks to her. And a big thanks to you for listening in. This and all our shows are a team effort. For this show, our producers are Clara Neipert and Joel Patnod. Technical directors are Lee Rayburn and Jeff Robbins. And our executive director is Jill Nadeau. I'm Larry Mueller. Thank you for listening. Stay with us. Lots in store here on WPR News.